Hey everybody, welcome to the Mini PC Show. This is Big Dudes Little Tech. I can say that because it's just the door geek and myself this week. And we're big dudes. Brian's a little more, I think, fit and trim than the two of us. At least that's what I like to imagine him by listening to his voice all the time. Door, how you doing?
Doing okay. Do you imagine Brian lots of times?
Well, yeah. When you listen to people on the radio or podcasts, sometimes you're extremely disappointed when you see them in person. And you know, I can say that I've got a pretty good face for radio, and I know how that works. So just if you don't want to be disappointed, don't check out the live stream. But then you're also missing out on chat and stuff like that. But this show, we don't have a live stream going yet anyway, so it's okay.
Yeah. And I will say, when I picture Brian from his voice, he is definitely chiseled. He is like a man's man.
Right.
Looking man.
Right. Yeah. See?
Yeah.
Boy, he's got that way, doesn't he? He's got us both convinced.
Yes, he does. Well, you know, somebody has to be the good looking one, I guess, on the show.
The alpha male.
The alpha male. I'm doing pretty good, all things considered. Granted, have not had really much of any time to do any project things that I would like to do. And when I came downstairs today, my Raspberry Pi M3, surprise, surprise, running Ubuntu Mate for no reason. After 2 weeks of working just fine, I come down, the desktop won't load correctly, and certain applications won't load correctly, so I'm gonna nuke and pave that thing, see if I can get a better reaction. Or
not,
I'm probably just going to go back to the Odroid C2 as my normal mobile desktop.
Not Raspberry Pi M3.
No, Banana Pi M3.
Yeah, I think you said Raspberry Pi.
I'm sorry. Right. My Banana Pi octa-core computer.
Dang.
8-core. Well, I know, but it I do have a heat sink on it, and it does run still a little bit warm. No matter what OS I load, I seem to always see like multiple NICs, which makes no sense. I should not see multiple Ethernet connections.
Oh, wow.
So there's definitely some funny stuff going on with this board. I know now two people who have one, they both use it for very isolated tasks, and they both say it runs fine. I'm not going to say great, but fine. Mine runs okay, but the Odroid is just so nice.
Yeah, I haven't got to play. I got to play a little bit with the stuff down here. I had purchased that Pi drive from Western Digital. So,
No. You didn't buy the Pi drive. You bought the whole kit.
Well, first I bought the Pi drive. Remember, I think it was like Pi Day. We were doing the podcast live. I bought the Pi drive. And then I just kind of let it sit. We went to Linux Fest Northwest. I didn't mess with it before I left. I got back and I was kind of looking at it. I'm like, I got a Raspberry Pi 2 sitting here. Let's make this thing go together. And then I look at it. I'm like, wait a minute. I don't have that USB cord for this thing, because it was that USB 3.1 or whatever, the really flat one. And so I look around, and I'm like, you know what? Even if I had that, it needs to go from that USB 3 to a mini, and I know I was not going to have that cord. So I go back online, we sell those at Western Digital specifically for this thing, and it's also got a breakout, so it'll power. It's a Y adapter, basically, that goes from a female mini USB that you'd normally plug into your Pi to power it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You normally plug a male micro USB into your Pi. So it's got a female micro USB for that. And then from there, it has the USB 3 port that goes to the drive, and then it also forks off and powers the Pi. And provides the data to go back and forth. No,
okay.
I'm wrong. Because no, the data is actually on a separate. But anyway, they sell a cord that is specifically made to connect your Pi to your Pi drive and power it all. So, okay, that's $9. But when I ordered my Pi drive, they did send a little card. Hey, thanks for checking out the Pi drive. Here's 20% off your next order. So that was nice. So the cord was $9. And then they also have this plastic case for it all, so that you can put your Pi and the drive and everything in this case. And I had looked at it, and I thought I had remembered it being very elegant, and so I ordered that too. And so I think with shipping and everything was $17 for the case and the cord. And I'd already paid $31.42 for the drive. So no big deal. Yeah, so I ordered it. And when I got, I was really, really underwhelmed with how it looked. I didn't care for the look of this case at all. It's my wife kind of thought it looked like a bagel slicer or something. It's basically, it's got an inside part that you slide your Raspberry Pi on. And I guess it's engineered pretty well. I mean, your Pi sits nice and cozy, and they've got a nice little place to route the wire along the bottom. It also comes with an L bracket for your HDMI cord, because the way the Pi sits in there and the way the wires have to get routed, you do need a right angle there, a 90 degree. And then the Pi drive sits on the other side. That side is a little less well engineered because the Pi drive kind of flops around in there. And then so you basically just slide all of that. Those things are connected. There's a piece of plastic with a Pi on one side and a drive on the other side. You just kind of slide that down inside of a very luminescent piece of white plastic. I ordered the white one, of course, you know. So just because it looks like an Apple product, that's why. But so I slid it in there, and then the whole back of it's open, so you can slide all your wires down too. It's not like it's got ports for your wires to come out of this thing. And it just, I don't know, it's just kind of cheesy. And then the Pi drive itself has such a bright white light, and this plastic does not hold it back at all. It's too bright for like a room that you're going to try to sleep in or anything like that. It's very bright.
I'll say it looks very efficiently made is the word I'll use to try to be positive about it. The plastic looks nearly translucent. I was shocked at how easy I could see through the plastic. And to me, the whole reason to get a case is either A, to have it completely opaque, or B, have it transparent to show off something on the inside, mm-hmm. Not halfway in between. I don't understand that. And the light being as bright as you're saying it is, I would have to, I don't know, duct tape it, or I would have to put something over top of it, because I mean, my little mini computers, I have lights that are blinking and they're fine, but they're not crazy bright.
Yeah, and I can put a little electrical tape over the white light on here, and you can, and it's not black. And I mean, the red light on the Pi is, you know, shines right through this just fine. But no, I agree with you, Dora. It should either be blocking it or be clear so you can show it off. The in between, yeah, just seems, you know, it's just kind of shabby, I think.
Well, and I'll say the look of the design I like. I think it has a nice, sleek look. I like the cords coming out of the back, and that way it pushes everything to the one side. I like the idea of having everything sit vertical in a nice, compact fashion. But to have the drive flop around, because this is a spinning disk drive, mm-hmm. makes me a little bit uncomfortable,
right.
Just a shade uncomfortable. The L bracket is very functional, but it also looks gigantic. I don't know if it has to be that big. But it literally looks like something if you were a kid playing like Pog with, you could easily smash the other guy's deck. You know.
Well, I mean, it's an HDMI. It's a full size HDMI one way and a full size. Yeah. I mean, there's, I don't know if there's much room for shrinking that down, perhaps. But
I don't know. It's an A to A, so yeah, it is pretty big. That's one thing I learned. I'm showing off now. HDMI A is the big one. HDMI B is one step down in size. HDMI C is smaller down in size. So, you know, it's like a bra size in reverse.
So I realized recently that when we were out at Lynx Fest Northwest, I gave away that adapter that was a mic. Well, see, I don't know the nomenclature you brought it up, but I'm going to say mini HDMI port to VGA adapter I had. I gave that to Chuck. And then after that exchange occurred, Dora had given me the JXD gamepad 3.0, I believe, and that has the same micro HDMI. I don't know, Dora, is this a C referring to?
I believe it's a B.
A B, okay. So, yeah, so now I could use that again. So I might have to look and see if I can AMZ Review Trader another one of those to hook that up to a TV or something.
Yeah, I mean, it should be easy to get. Honestly, I still tip my hat to Western Digital for doing this. It makes it much more plausible for normal, quote-unquote, people to do it. Now, here's my question. They encourage you to use Berry Boot for the OS, so they don't have their own Western Digital OS or their own Western Digital SD card with an OS on it that you saw?
You know, I heard of that. I didn't see anywhere I could buy it, I don't think. I don't remember seeing anywhere I could purchase that. And I downloaded Berry Boot from the Western Digital site, or at least a link straight off of the Western Digital site. And I did that first, you know, just because I wanted to make sure it worked, and I wanted it to be, you know, fairly painless the first time, at least, you know, seeing, well, this is what they suggest. It's their product. So yeah, I'll go with that. And it was, and basically it's, Berry Boot for anybody who's never used it, because I had never used it prior to this. It boots to this, and then from there you can install your operating systems. And it gives a list of, I don't know, probably, I'd say there's probably 15 different choices on there.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, there's full operating systems like Ubuntu Mate, Fedora Mate. There was Puppy on there. But then they've also had some specific things, like one operating system was only for digital signage. If you wanted just to turn this Raspberry Pi into a, you know, some kind of a digital signage board hooked up to a large screen or something, and probably run some fancy little slideshow or something. I didn't get into that one too much yet, but I did install it because I'd like to check that out.
Very cool. Yeah, looking at the Pi store.wdc.com, what they sell you is a 4 gigabyte card with Berry Boot already preloaded on it. And if anyone hasn't heard Berry Boot but has used Noobs, I believe, is the official Raspberry Pi. Here's some distros you can load onto your card. Berry Boot is not the official one, but like you kind of said there, Berry Boot, I do believe, offers more variety of installations of operating systems. But with all that said, I would love to have this on a desktop. I would love to be able to download one thing, boot to it on my laptop or desktop when I'm installing an OS, to where I'd have the choices right there of what to install.
Absolutely.
Instead of doing it the old-fashioned way, as far as I'm concerned, download, pick something, go to a website, download an ISO, take the ISO, figure out how to put it, and do all the bouncing around. I would love to have just, like, a DistroWatch exclusive top 20 distributions where you can easily have one install media and just install whatever you would like.
Yeah, right, yeah, like a DistroWatch USB for May of 2016. Throw that in. Here's all the very close to being updated one, you know. But it had RetroPie, so I installed RetroPie. And I think it had probably, I'd say, 16-ish games already on the RetroPie, where I didn't have to go scraping too much for content. I can't remember what else I put on there. I don't have it powered up right now because it was kind of show and door before the show, the physical hardware of it. Thinking back, I probably would go with the black, I think. But I do like the fact, like you said, Dor, because I would have just had this stuff laying on top of each other, strewn about, you know, just kind of in a big pile in front of the monitor before. I do like at least that this will hold it all together, and, you know, you can pick it all up and move it, you know, over a little bit if you need to move it out of the way to lay something else down on the desk. For $9.99 for the case and $9.99 for the cord, and they gave me that coupon code. I'm not complaining at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't expect $30 case for $9.99. It's exactly. I mean, I think it's priced well for what it is, and it functions just fine for a mini PC to have something you can grab it and pick it up while it's still plugged in and move it around and set it down, and there's not a bunch of cords laying all over it. It's nice.
Right. And I will say, if you go to store.wdc.com, the cases do look a little bit more, I don't know, shiny, polished looking. I will say that.
And I'm looking.
But if you look at the cases and you scroll down, you can clearly see the blinding white light even shining through the black case.
Now see, I'm looking, and I've never been to the one you were. I'm at wdlabs.wd.com/products-raspberry-pi-accessories, and that's where I ordered it because the buy now buttons are here. I don't know if you've got buy now buttons where you're at.
Yeah. Add to cart.
Okay, so where I'm looking at it here, I don't see. You know, they look pretty shiny and nice. There's one that kind of shows that maybe you might be able to see green coming through it weirdly, but Yeah, there's no idea that there's going to be a bright white light from this page that I ordered from.
Oh yeah, that definitely different page. Well, you know, I mean, it is what it is. The case only being $9, I still think that's great, fantastic price. I love sub $20 cases, and to have a $10 case where everything, to be honest, I like the idea of everything vertical, saving space, because with all the stuff I have strewn across my area,
yeah,
to have a vertical case, I think is a nice touch.
Yep.
Very cool. Let's do the emails. We have more than a couple emails to get to, if I'm not mistaken, Eric.
Sure. Let me make sure. Okay. This first email is from Joe Licata, and he says, "Hey guys, not sure if you've already shared this. If so, don't read on the show." And no, I checked. We have not. And he says, "The RTK.GPIO is a USB GPIO board that you can use with virtually any machine, whether that be Windows, Mac, and, why, of course, Linux, too. Not sure about Android. What this roughly $10 piece of hardware does is it allows you to use as a standalone with a PC or laptop and Raspi equipment. And two, it has an extra header to the Raspi, allowing you to add multiple add-ons at the same time. Technically, you can add up to 127 of these RTK boards. I'm still a beginner with the mini PCs and not sure what you might need 127 add-ons for. Ryan Walmsley, the founder of Ryan Tech and employee of Raspberry Pi, is currently using it in schools for non-Raspi lessons on their existing computers. Love the show. I wanted to hear what your thoughts are on this." And he gives us a link to the Kickstarter. Very cool. I mean, this is basically, if you are learning about the GPIO pins on your Raspberry Pi, this is a way to have access to those same kind of pins on any computer via a USB. And it has 392 backers currently on Kickstarter, and they're close to getting their goal. They got 19 days to go. They have an $11,909 goal, and they're at $98.50 right now.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. He sent this. I couldn't comprehend what it was. I literally couldn't comprehend what it was. And I read his email, but in typical fashion, when I read stuff, I don't really catch it all. And I didn't really grasp what the hell this thing was. What the hell? And I spent 20 minutes thinking, RTK. What the hell is RTK? Where's, I don't know, are Raspberry something? And so I totally got sidetracked for the first 20 minutes. Then it finally hit me. If you don't want to program against the GPIO pins on a Raspberry Pi because of speed or efficiency or something else, or some tool that you're used to when you're programming isn't available, it's instead available on your desktop or laptop, you can via USB plug this board into your full computer, your x86 64-bit computer, and it emulates right there. Boom, you have the pins that are equivalent to the Raspberry Pi pins, so you can program in a fashion, in a form, in a workflow, in an application that you're used to. Okay, makes a hell of a lot of sense, and it's at least planning on being nice and cheap, quote-unquote, for people to buy. So I'm completely in favor of this. I think this is a really smart idea because I have seen people who said, "I want to do something on the Raspberry Pi, but for me to make it on the Raspberry Pi takes too long. What can I do?" And I always looked for emulators on your desktop computer where you could emulate the ARM processor, boot it up, give it more RAM, and do stuff from inside there. But if you're just programming against the pins, this to me seems like a much better solution because it's really a good, I think, test for this kind of thing. Really smart thing, 19 days to go. Hopefully they make their complete backer list. Right now, 392 backers. Hopefully they're able to do this because this is, I think, a really smart thing to do. And I do like the fact they're already publicizing a spreadsheet showing all the compatibility with all the different hats you can get for the Pi and the Pi type boards. So I wish them nothing but luck.
Yeah, this will cost you about $14 USD because it's from Britain or something, or euros. Yeah, it's euros. Sorry. And so that'll get you the RTK GPIO board assembled and ready to go, and this should ship October 2016.
Very cool. No, for some reason, I completely miss this. There's so many things out there going on with these mini boards. It's so easy to miss stuff. So this is a really good find, and thank you for sharing it, Joe.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Joe Hurricanrada.
Exactly.
Okay, this is from Greg Smith. Guys, on the last Mini PC show, you were talking about splitting up your network gear so you have a wired and a wireless network. I'm a firm believer in not having an all-in-one device. I have a couple of questions, so could you go into it a little more in depth? Now, our network engineer extraordinaire is not here tonight, but we will try to handle it.
It's really easy, in fact. All it is internet, modem, here's the way I do it, wired router, and then from that you have a wireless router. You set the wireless router into bridged mode. So you let the wired router do all the DHCP, all the IP assignments, and it's closer to the internet. So the wireless can go completely explode and not work, and your wired will still work just fine. It also, by doing it like that.
Yeah, I'm not done with the email yet.
Okay.
But so what you said so far, because he's like, so he had an idea. He's like, ISP, then broadband modem, then wired router, and then everything wired, including a wireless access point.
Well, okay, out of the wired router, you typically have four pins, four NICs. I take one of them and plug that up to the wireless router, so you have three other ones.
So
now what I do,
you plug it in, you're plugging it into a wireless router, not an access point, right?
Well, an access point is a router.
Okay, gotcha.
So I have my wired router LAN plugged up to the wireless router's WAN, and then I just set the wireless router into bridged mode. And what I do is I have what I really should have is a managed switch, but I have an unmanaged switch with 10 NICs in it. And right now I have 8 of those NICs used for all my computing equipment down here in the studio. But I have it isolated and separated. Now what it really enables me to do is to lean over if I want and unplug a cable right next to me. Mm. And that completely turns and that unplugs the wireless router. So everything in the house goes down. No kids on Netflix or anything, or kids on YouTube sucking up my bandwidth. And I have, you know, control again over my domain.
Yeah, that's good to have. My wireless router is way up there, and I almost need to stand on something to reach it. It's so high. You know, it's not like it's accessible. Okay, he also says, I always have a Cat6 running to a central network switch, and from there to a few of the rooms in the house. So my Roku in the living room is wired. The Roku in the bedroom and the XBMC box in the family room are still wireless, but I'll get that taken care of soon. The Plex server is on Ethernet also. I can tell the difference between playing a video from the Plex on the Roku in the living room and the XBMC box. Yeah, so he can tell the difference between it being wired and wireless on those two.
Oh, yeah, period. Wired is always faster. Even if you have wireless N or whatever, it doesn't matter. AC, it doesn't matter. Wired is always quicker, which is why back in the day, Steve, when he did Podnut shows, he didn't care who you were. He didn't care what technology you had. He don't care how much you swore up and down of anything. He wanted you to be connected via a wire when you did the show, because it always meant you had the least amount of lag and you had the best possible connection.
And I'd say if you're going to be a guest on the show, stick with that for now. Too. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. And then, so he has three questions. Do you go out of your way to buy a non-wireless router or build one?
Okay. Well, I did just buy one because it was on a really good sale, and supposedly you can put OpenWrt on it, but it hasn't been done yet. I bought the MyUI or ShowMe AC1200, which is a brand new router just released maybe a week or two ago, and it has complete, I mean, everything on the box is in, I don't know, foreign languages, unbeknownst to me. I believe, for simplicity's sake, I just buy a quote-unquote cheap. And when I say cheap, not a $300 wireless router. I buy a $50-ish, $60-ish dollar wireless router. Then I have repeaters, one on each floor. I'm a three-floor house. If I go above a $60 router, I always find myself itching to buy a new one too soon, and I don't know why. So I don't build one right now. I would like to, but I'm not going to do it because that's well over $100 typically.
So your answer to that is no. You don't go out of your way to buy a non-wireless router. You're still buying a wireless router.
I'm buying a wireless router, and then with the non-wired one, I have no reason. No reason to build one. I just don't have a reason to build one. And those, all I need is gigabit ports and I'm fine. I don't have any special requirements to it. If I was smart, I would build what Mark used to call a Boris box, which is the PF Sense box right before my internet where everything gets connected to, where I can bandwidth shape and throttle and quality of service and do all that network engineering type stuff and set up firewalls and logs and monitors. That to me seems like a heck of a lot of work. So I don't do that.
Okay, so I think you answered his next question. He said, the second question is, does the wired router still have the firewall and other security stuff, or do you have a dedicated firewall box?
I should have a dedicated firewall box, but I don't. It's kind of like the doctor who tells you to quit smoking and then he lights up a cigarette himself.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. And then his third question, I really like web interfaces for configuring the current wireless routers. Do the wired routers have the same sort of interface? Only reason I ask this is that I would think that wired routers are probably geared to more technical people. No need to dumb it down for these folks. Well, I can answer that.
No.
They've got usually very much identical access interfaces as the wireless routers.
It's typically the exact same interface, period. Or, like you discovered, and then I discovered after you, which meant I didn't discover anything, there are some manufacturers who offer dedicated, like, Android applications, if you want, to where you can just have it on your phone. If you're connected to your network, already have everything loaded into it, one click and bam, you're editing your configuration for either your wired or wireless router.
Right, yeah. The Netgear Nighthawks have that Netgear Genie app that you can put on your phone that does that.
Yeah, and if I hypothetically, let's just say, didn't have to work 9 to 5 every day, I would probably sit home and I would create, it would go internet, the modem, and then right after the modem, I would have my Boris box, which is my hardware firewall routing, monitoring, bandwidth shaping box. After that, I would have my wired router, completely homemade, with only 3 ports on it. One coming from the internet, one going to the wireless router, and then one going to a managed switch. And then my wireless router on the end, which would just be nothing fancy. Still probably, even if I made one, I would use Steve Gibson's website, and I'll put that link in the note. I want to say it's called pcengines.cn, possibly, where you can buy all the parts, make an x86 micro small computer with all your wireless antennas on it, and have ridiculous amounts of customization ability to it, and do a whole lot of fancy things, I'll say. But I don't have that kind of time, so I can't do it. To do that kind of thing means you're no longer a user or a homeowner. You are now a network administrator.
Yeah, and a developer, because you're making something better.
Yeah.
We do have another email. This is from Christian, and he says, Door, helping hands or third hand, make it yourself. Then he gives a link to an instructables.com build a pair of helping hands article. This is going back to Dor going and purchasing his stuff for working with mini PCs and getting into the GPIO pins and getting into breadboards and all this stuff. So he's kind of listing off the things. So I don't know. You can make your own helping hands. I bought mine at Radio Shack a long time ago. I used it a lot more than I expected. I don't think that I had a very good one, because there was a lot of times I would feel myself having to tighten up little wing nuts and things more often than probably a quality one would have had to do. Okay, and he goes on, solder sucker, not really useful if playing with surface mount components, but with old through hole stuff, it can be useful. Buy one from DX.com or other favorite Chinese supplier. Don't spend big money. The cheap ones work well enough. Want to make it really useful? Get a short piece of fuel line from a hobby store. It's made from temperature-resistant silicon and a small piece slipped over the tip of a solder sucker will let you really get a good seal around a through hole while not melting it with your soldering iron. While you're at it, some of that tubing slipped over crotch jaws on your third hand will protect the insulated wires from the sharp teeth of the croc clamps.
That almost sounded perverse.
I almost felt dirty reading that. I kind of get what he's talking about with the solder sucker, though, because there was times where, because those solder suckers get a little bit too hot sometimes, and it was a little clunky at times too. So yeah, that's nice. Sorry about that. Okay, did you have anything you wanted to talk about his suggestion for the solder sucker there? Because he's got a bunch more that we're going to go through.
Well, I mean, I'll just say it makes sense what he's saying. I have no idea. So it's the kind of thing I have to believe someone who's done it before. I do like the idea of creating my own alligator clips, and that's why he calls croc jaws alligator clips.
Okay.
And making them your helping hands. But, I mean, I'm going to need, like, see, I have to have them, and I have to have a big magnifying glass because I am really, really bad eyesight. What I did here for a while was I had my old Logitech QuickCam 9000 connected to a second computer, and I used to set it to the highest definition possible, which meant the frame rate was bad, and I would use that to look at components on boards because I can't see that. I can't read that small stuff. So I have my 27-inch monitor displaying a zoomed-in image from a webcam, which tells me I'm going to have a big magnifying glass in order to solder without ruining components.
Yeah, yeah. I do have a pair of... let me see if I can find them here. I think they're right here. And I bought these at QVC. I didn't buy them from QVC. I bought them from an estate sale from some old lady who shopped at QVC. And basically, you just slide them over your head, and then like this, and then you can flip them down for when you need to use them. And they're nice magnifying glasses.
Yeah, like they look like Doc Brown specials from Back to the Future.
Yeah, I think these may be for. I think they're for reading, for old people reading. I'm guessing. Otherwise, they wouldn't have sold them at QVC. But I could see like a jeweler using them or something. So you got both your hands free, and you can flip them up out of your way when you don't want to use them.
Yeah, but they better magnify pretty good is my thought.
And they do. I mean, these ones are okay. You can slide in and out different lenses and strengths.
Oh, that helps.
So, you know, whatever works for you.
That'd be a good solution.
All right, Christian says, get a 35-watt soldering iron. It's all you need. Do not use those infernal soldering guns. If you use a gun, you'll melt all that plastic and not get a decent solder joint. Don't get a 25-watt iron. You want a bit of heat, and a 35-watt pencil iron will hit the sweet spot. Get a good one locally. Weller and Hayco are good brands. You do not need a soldering station. I now have two stations, and other than quick warm-up, I really don't need the features they offer. If you end up with a Weller or Hayco, make sure it comes with a chisel tip and not a canonical or round-pointing tip. Something like a 0.8mm chisel tip for most smaller stuff, but perhaps a 1.2mm if you want to solder slightly thicker wires. You need to transfer heat to the components you are soldering. You need to transfer heat to the components you are soldering, so surface area of the contact makes a big difference. The video should explain most of that. I go up to 4.5mm chisel tips, but that's when I'm soldering big connectors. So, there you go, 35 watts. Should be good there. Okay, he's going on solder wick. If you need it, go get the good stuff. No cheaping out. Get it from an electronic shop in your area, and they will make sure you have the good stuff. You only need a very small roll of it. Don't buy the bigger sizes, and most times it's for cleaning up pads on circuit boards. So if you're not working with such, don't get the wick until you need it. Now, I was thinking solder wick was a different way of instead of using a solder sucker, some people used a wick to do it, but maybe I could be wrong. It seems like I've used it that way though. Okay, and then here we go. So, we're starting to finish up here. Solder. Dave at EEV blog gives excellent, albeit at times annoying advice. A thin electronic solder with rosin flux is what you want. It can be very handy to get a bottle with liquid rosin flux or a small container of rosin paste. I have and use both. The liquid in a dispenser bottle with a needle-type tip gets the nod. But when working with heavy wires and the like, the paste can be nice, too, as it doesn't drip down the wire and get onto your hands. Yeah, I think I've only used the paste. But the liquid sounds really good. With the correct electronic solder, you don't have to clean up afterwards, as the residue does not attract moisture, resulting in corrosion. If you would like to clean it anyway, rubbing alcohol will clean the soldering area and the sticky stuff on your hands. Plus, it does no harm to most electronics. Make sure you either get 60-40 or 63-37 solder, lead to tin ratios. Both are fine, but the 63-37 is eutectic, goes from a liquid to a solid with no half-melted state in between. Lead-free solder is crap. It's pointless and useless, except as a marketing term. Mm. That's some great advice. Oh, and wait, I gotta read. And he gives a lot of soldering tutorials. And he gives one video onto why free solder sucks, why lead-free solder sucks. And it says, Eric, regarding Cat 5 and so on, use Cat 6. Article on Cat cables for me. And Mark C. Door, please pass this on to Mark at AAA. Check out RC model reviews on YouTube for quad stuff, both theory reviews and how-to. In regards, Captain, I had to come up for air after Dorm mentioned Micronauts Zero.
Yep, Micronauts is a hell of a good source of information on his blog and YouTube channel. He understands much more than the average fellow, and more than I will say, and apparently Captain Zero likes him as well. Christian likes him as well. There's a hell of a lot of information in this email. I ain't gonna lie. I read it, but Lord, it did take me a little bit of time to get through it. I grasp most of what he's saying. I will say that. Soldering, I would say gun. The solderer I was looking at was a Weller 40 watt with interchangeable tips. And it was only like $45, I think, on Amazon. Not too expensive. I was able to find it just a little touch cheaper in like Home Depot or someplace. So it wasn't that wasn't too expensive, I will say that. And it met most of his requirements. It was 5 more watts, which I do believe is only going to affect it in 2 ways, if I'm reading his email right. Possibly make it heat up a little bit quicker, and make it heat up a little bit further. But with most of this stuff I picture myself doing, I think he did nail it right. I don't need a lot of watts. Most of it's going to be very mild soldering is what I'm thinking.
Well, if it doesn't have a knob that you can adjust that heat, just stick with the 35 watt. Otherwise, you're gonna be putting holes and stuff.
Right, right. And I'm going to take his all of his YouTube links and his Helping Hands link and his article about Cat 5, Cat 6, and I'm going to make sure they are all in the notes for everyone to partake in. I will say that really good information. I will say the information he gave me and that RK GPIO board in both of them in combination, I can actually see not having to devote lots and large amount of time, but still be able to do some sort of creation, construction, hacking, if you will. So that's really good stuff.
Yeah, I wanted to show you this too, Dor. I put this together the other day. So this is the big breadboard that I think.
It's a big.
I added these connectors at the top and put some feet on the bottom of it. But this, this is going to be nice sometime when I get some time on my hands to hook things up to.
Okay, now what I need somebody to do, Joe, Christian, Joe Licata, anybody, in layman's terms, and as short as possible, with as small words as possible, what's a breadboard for? Because I think Thank thought it was for like prototyping.
Well,
if you will.
I think, and I'm not Joe or Christian, but I think it's for connecting stuff together, seeing how it's going to work before you do the soldering.
Before you do the final, right.
Yeah, before you make it permanent. You can test, prototyping, I guess that would be a good word for that, wouldn't it?
It makes sense, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm right about that or not. And I'll say there is a voicemail that I forgot to get lined up this episode. We will play it next episode.
I think, if you want to throw a resistor in to save from burning something up, you can throw it in there and see if the thing still works, right? don't know. Or you can do the math and know before you do it, but yeah, that's math. Who wants that?
Not sure.
Okay, Dor.
Hey, was that all the emails?
I think so.
Okay, down to the matter of at hand.
Well, I take it back. We had one more email, but I think it's a soldering email, but it's a comic about soldering.
Yeah, I will say, I remember hearing, I think it was years ago, literally years ago, somebody mentioning this. Soldering is easy PDF. S-O-L-D-E-R is easy PDF. I'm going to make sure there's a link to this in the note as well. It looks like mightyohm.com is hosting what looks like this same file, so I'll make sure there's a link in there. And I remember people talking about this years ago and saying how it literally showed anybody how anybody can do this. So, you know, that's good.
Yeah, it is nice.
Especially if I can share this link correctly. That'd be nice. I did know what I was getting into, but at the same token, I want to apologize to everybody. I think, stipulate with the first shows talking about the giveaway for the Pine 64 that enter as often as you want, blah, 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 blah. Some people took it to heart, which there's nothing wrong with that. I'm sure some of the people in their feeds got a little bit upset at the sheer amount of postings by some people.
Do you think other people search for hashtag free Pine 64?
No. Only me.
So but you're the only one who sees it all.
I do see it all, but I did see at least one person complain about the amount of them that they were seeing in their stream.
Okay. I gotta say, I'm not complaining.
Well, I know you're not. But the typical internet logic is if one person complains, there might have been as many as 10 people who actually felt like, what the hell is this? So I say, I take the blame, my responsibility. I'm the one that set the rules and regulations up in the beginning. I should have been more conservative with them, but either here or there. Okay. We have over 100 entries for this giveaway. This is for the Pine 64 mini computer that I just received in the mail a little bit ago. We have a bunch of entries by a bunch of different people. I will say I'm now going to assign extra bonus points or put in modifiers. Okay, modifier. If you did a real world analog posting of this, you get about 15 more extra points because that's awesome. If you did something different, inventive, unique, where you actually had to put a little bit of time into your posting, you're going to get double points for that. So if you did one entry and it was actually inventive, took time, you had to do something else besides just type out the posting, it's going to count twice. I already factored these in. I will say if you only have one entry, like, let me scroll down and say, Lionel only had one entry. Bars only had one entry. Info Lookup only had one entry. You're immediately going to get more entries. You're going to get 5 extra points assigned to you because you were unbelievably restrained. For that, you get an extra bonus points.
Nice.
And I will say, Orion, O-R-I-N, he gets another extra bonus points as well.
Just because you like things that start with O's?
Well, no, because he only did one entry.
Oh, okay.
Joshua Mason, he only did one entry. He's getting bonus points. Neil Dudeman, if you don't know who Neil Dudeman is, he did do more than a couple podcasts a couple years ago. He's basically in the middle of Europe, farming, being a family man, and he used to podcast from time to time. He gets 15 extra points because he's Dudeman. There's only one Dudeman, and I really do miss hearing his voice a lot, so I'm trying to encourage him to do more stuff. And the reason I'm giving these points out is because it almost doesn't affect the main people who are in this entry. They have so many entries, okay? We're not going to diminish their odds by much with all these points giving out. And I mean that we're not even coming close to diminishing their odds because I actually did sit down and figure this out. So with that, there is 109 base entries. After all the modifiers, it only goes up to 147 total entries. I'm going to ask Eric. I'm going to use random.org, random number generator. I have the minimum and maximum numbers in there. I'm going to ask Eric, please pick a number between 1 and 10.
I will, but before I do that, I want to give a shout out to all the peeps who took a meme generator or took funny pictures and added Pine 64 words to it. You guys rock. You guys brought a smile to my face for the last week, you know, just by, and Podnut stuff too. You know who you are if you took this time to do this. And I appreciate every bit of it because they're hilarious to me.
I do too. And I got to say the use of J. Jonah Jameson was, magnifique. It was, if it wasn't ad hoc and just random, I would heavily consider the whole thing was planned and scripted because that one fit perfectly.
I don't even know which one that was, but
J. Jonah Jameson was the boss from Spider-Man. It was Cody saying if Kevin wins it, he's just going to give it back again.
Oh yes.
That earns extra points onto itself because that was just genius.
Okay, Dory. So you want me to pick a number between 1 and 10?
Yeah, so I'm going to hit the random number generator that many times.
Oh, okay. 8.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And I like hitting it that slow because I can see all the numbers and I can really see the fact that it is pretty random. Oh, man. Number 82. I cannot believe it. He literally only had like 3 entries. He's the lowest odd person in this pool.
Really?
He's tied for the lowest odd person in this pool. And it's, I want to say, I'm going to hope I pronounce his name correctly because I'm an idiot. Even though I've heard his name multiple times, I listened to his podcast, Taj. T-A-T-H-A-J, Taj. You are the winner, and I'm not going to notify anybody. An email.
Is he got that notify. Tosh.0 podcast? That guy?
No, that's Tosh. I'm not going to notify anyone in Twitter. I'm not going to notify anybody in Google+. I'm not going to notify anybody in email. The way that you confirm that you won this is because you listen to this show and you send me an email at mail@podnuts.com is the easiest way. It is right now May the 11th. Taj, you have till June the 1st to ping me.
There you go.
And if Taj does not win this, the two people right there butting up against him are Andy Long and Jeff Owens. So then if Taj does not do this, I'm going to announce it. And the first one after that between Andy and Jeff Owens that pings me will win this.
Now, Jeff, Andy, don't ping him yet.
No, wait.
Wait until June 1st and Dora will give you the secret signal and then...
Well, and I can tell everyone, I'm never doing this again. I literally had to monitor all these different services, look for everything I could possibly find, bookmark everyone I could possibly find, then export the ones that I found, put them into a different spreadsheet, then click every link to everything that I did, and then document everyone's name who posted everything. This was way too much like work, and I'm never doing this kind of contest ever again. No matter what, it's never happening. Ain't going to do it.
I'd like to somehow solicit more of these memes. I don't know how we'd do it, but
I don't know either.
It was great. I appreciated. I you guys don't even know what that meant to me. So thank you.
It would, and I'm going to tell everyone right now. More than a couple people who put in for this contest, I'm still going to send them something to at least play with, either temporarily to borrow or send them something permanent, just for saying thank you for supporting the network for all these years. So. Even if you didn't win, don't be shocked if I contact you.
Awesome. Yeah, I agree, Dor. That's a good job.
Okay, now we have to remember that. Taj won. Taj won. So in 2 weeks when we get the email from a guy who says he won, it was Taj. Taj won.
Taj. Yes. Taj is the winner. If anybody contacts us saying that they're the winner, they should probably be by the name of Taj. Yeah.
And if they're not, then we're going to be highly suspect.
Dor... Did you add like 8 more links to this spreadsheet since we started?
Well, I did, but then I put them all, I marked them all as red because they were stuff like the YouTube videos from Christian,
okay,
Captain Zero, and you know, the PDF, the Helping Hands thing, and your link to the Kickstarter,
okay,
GPIO, that's all it was.
All right. Well, now we're done with our self-promotion and our feedback section. Do you got any new stuff you want to talk about this week?
There was only, I think, one or two things in here that I really did find interesting. Yeah. This one I just had to look at. It was line 160 in our notes. And it was on RaspberryPi.org official blog website. It was RPI Kids Raspberry Pi 2 Arduino Emulation Station powered Kids Entertainment Center. And there's a link to a YouTube video there where the guy goes through the basics of what he did to build this custom Kids Entertainment Center is the only way that I can describe it. Wow, is all I gotta say.
Yeah.
If this guy has a 9-to-5 job, which I'm guessing he does, because this looks like it's actually polished and, you know, well done. Wow, because this is really cool. This guy gets an extreme tip of the hat from me.
Yeah, this is cool. It's it looks like it must be like some kind of a fiberglass molded on the very outside of it, because he's got, it's kind of steampunkish looking too. He's got like really funky looking speakers, or at least the grill mesh on them is really funky, kind of a flower design. I don't know. But it's all metal and the copper and stuff.
Yeah, and if you look closely, you can actually see the Pi inside of the device. He has a good, what looks like probably at least 17-inch monitor, maybe 20-inch monitor or TV. Speakers connected to it. Underneath it, he has USB ports. Looks like he might have a total of 10 USB ports, and it looks like there's a controller possibly plugged up to one of them. Shows it playing games, and then he also shows it loading XBMC, looking at stuff like B-Movie. Maybe one of the worst comedy cartoon movies ever. Just saying.
I've never seen it.
It was bad. It was Jerry Seinfeld. And I like Jerry Seinfeld, but that movie was horrible. B-Movie. That really caught my eye, because that is really a guy with a lot of, I don't know what the word is, honor, because he put a lot of time into this thing. And it looks good. It looks really good.
Well, I mean, you gotta have some sort of automotive or mechanic, some kind of crafting ability to make that molded shape around the speaker grills. And the 17 to 20 inch TV or monitor in there is probably only 1/3 of the size of the whole thing. You know, there's a huge clear plexiglass part on the far left that has the Pi in there, and then some odd, I don't know, like it looks like you almost turn like a dial.
Yeah.
To even power it up. And there's some other circuitry going on in there too, it looks like. But you can see all of that. That's pretty neat. It's got like bass ports coming out for out of the speaker areas. There's some kind of switches above the left speaker. I'm not sure what that is. But yeah, you fire it up and play some games whenever you want to. That interface, do you have, okay, that interface for the games, do you have that on yours loaded up with games like that already?
Yeah. What that is a RetroPie or Emulation Station. RetroPie is the whole ecosystem. Emulation Station is that front end where you can have the pretty interface to browse your virtual consoles and then your virtual games.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of that going. I played Super Mario War. Does that sound like a game?
Hmm.
It was like,
I'm not going to say yes because I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. It was different. It was different. All right.
Okay. The other one, and it's only because I try to stay up on a lot of Linux type news, and this was one of the things I had never heard of. Line 162, a distribution called Q4OS brings its Trinity desktop to the Raspberry Pi 3. I've never heard of Q4OS, and when I look at the Trinity desktop, looks a heck of a lot like KDE. I don't know how it's the Trinity desktop, but
there's three of them.
Sure, I guess. I'm not gonna argue because I don't know. I'll just say I've never heard of this one before. It looks interesting. Every screenshot I'm looking, it does look like it's almost made for smaller screens, because all of the images that I see, the text versus screen size is gigantic compared to what I'm normally used to seeing, at least on an installed system. And if I go to the handy dandy distro watch I can see QoS is a Debian stable operating system out of Germany, because the Germans make good stuff. Architecture i386X 64 and ARM. Desktop is the Trinity desktop. So they do say it's a Trinity, so it must be a fork of KDE is what I'm thinking.
It does. It doesn't look widescreen at all. Like you said, it looks like it's made for old monitors or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's interesting looking just because it's a Debian-based distribution, then I can play with it without fear of completely breaking everything. I'm going to play with it. I want to see. Yeah, it says it offers a classic style interface. I'll go for that. It does say it's an active desktop. Its popularity is number 42 on DistroWatch, which is actually kind of high. So I'm going to download this, at least load it in a virtual machine, see what it's like. Interesting. Can't remember who it was who pushed this link to me, but I never heard of it before. So I love people showing me things that I don't know.
That's running a Raspberry Pi off of a Pi 3. Have you ran your Pi 3 much at all? Or have you? Or do you still even have one?
I ran it a little bit with my Pi Top, and then at Northwest Linux Fest Northwest, I gave it to Cody Cooper.
Okay, so you don't have one anymore?
Not right now, no. I do have one on order. I haven't got it yet.
Okay. I was thinking that's how that went down, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, so I tried my Odroid C2 in it, and I'm having fun not getting it to work.
That's fun.
Yeah.
You're learning.
Fan-diddly-tastic
fun. You're learning.
I'm learning what doesn't work in a Pi Top, yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You got the Pi Top waiting for hardware. Yes.
Yes. Yes, yes, that's what it is.
Okay, so you've got the Geek Dad RPi kit, the Raspberry Pi kit. Do you see that one in there? Maybe I found that from somewhere else. You don't have that link.
No,
I don't know where I got that from. Okay.
Oh, no. The only other thing that to me was just interesting was the idea of this. I don't know how useful it actually is, though. Line 163, and it goes to Pi My Life Up. PiMyLifeUp.com.
Nice. Which
if you have never been there, it used to be a pretty popular site. Now it's a lot of ads and a lot of self-promotion on the website, which I don't understand. I'm already at your website. I don't need more promotion. But it does have some really good information on it, and this is about DOSBox, DOSBOX, running on the Raspberry Pi to enable you to play not emulations of games, you know, but actual old-school DOS games. I like the idea of this for people who want that nostalgic, real DOSBox feeling, running old Tomb Raider or, I don't know, probably like Madden 95 maybe or something. And it wouldn't shock me if it actually runs more than a couple of these old things just fine, because our computers back then were so weak in comparison to what we have today.
What's a familiar DOS game that made it big?
Well, their example is Outrun, which I gotta say, I loved Outrun, but I played it in the arcade. Quake is a big one. Oregon Trail, two really popular ones, I'll say, Doom, hard to get more popular than Doom, which in Friday the 13th, there's another version of Doom coming out, Eric, just in case you weren't aware. And then the ever popular Leisure Suit Larry.
Yeah, I think I got my son into the beta test of the new Doom.
Mm.
So I don't know if he's played it yet. I should ask him about that. And, there was a newer version of Leisure Suit Larry that came out on the Xbox that I ended up scoring one time, too. It was really weird.
Scoring. the other games they mentioned here are Gauntlet, Load Runner, Arkanoid, which I never pronounced right as a kid, Lemmings, that was actually kind of big, yeah. Tetris, if you don't love Tetris, I question if you're a human, I'm just saying. Very cool. Yeah, I love the idea of actually running old DOSBox. Speaking of that, just a super side tangent that means nothing here. Did you hear about McLaren F1?
The car?
Yeah.
No.
McLaren F1, one of the highest costing, quote-unquote, supercars in existence, right?
Sure.
They have to go out and find as many 20-year-old compact laptops as possible. Because the old compact laptops, listen, here's that, has a special card you can insert into it called like a CA card or something like that, which allows it to interface with the McLaren F1. That's the only way they're able to do some work on these multi, I believe Leo said something like one of his shows, something like a whatever $1 million sports car. I don't believe it's even $1 million, but it is really expensive supercar. But they can only interface with it and only fix certain things and only work certain things with it with a 20-year-old compact laptop.
And nobody can make the USB adapter for that.
Apparently they have it.
There you go. There's your get that breadboard door, learn how to solder, and make them make the McLaren guys a USB adapter.
Yeah. And, if you just if you're interested in this, just Google search compact CA card, and like one of the things you'll see is a link to Popular Mechanics, why a 20-year-old laptop is still crucial to maintaining multi-million dollar cars.
That's weird.
Well, I mean, they had it back then. Back then, I'm sure it was a very high-end laptop, and I'm sure somebody thought it would be genius in order to use this to work on their
car. Maybe it was intentional. You know, maybe they're like, hey, you know, not everybody's got this laptop. Let's make sure that nobody's screwing with their own car. And we'll.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's an American car put out by a guy who used to design, I believe he used to work for Boeing.
All right. Sorry about that. I just assumed a supercar would be British, but, or at least European somehow.
I don't know. I don't know, but I saw that and it just made me laugh. That made me laugh, and the confirmation that the whole country of Ireland is paying Microsoft to get Windows XP patches. Both of them just make me laugh.
McLaren, I didn't think Italy when I heard McLaren, so I just figured it was Britain.
No, I'm not really sure.
I don't even know where I tried to find your link. I typed in what you said into Google, and I must have blindly clicked the first thing, and... I ended up at some place way different than that I'm going to have to go back and look at later.
Yeah. Compact, C-O-M-P-A-Q, space, C-A, space, card. That's
exactly what I typed in.
And the first link is Jalalpink.
The first non-sponsored link is EG Cards and Comics for me. And so I went to EG Cards and Comics. They've got a nice storefront.
Damn search bubble. Eric, I think we have definitely a lot of stuff here. I want to thank everyone for subscribing. I want to thank everyone for their patience because of all the postings out there. And if you did find this show because of those postings, please let me know. It will make me feel better about what happened to people's streams and feeds.
And just have you know that we're missing one of the hosts. So if you hated this show, if you hated the show, you're not hearing this part anyway. But if you made it to the end and you're wondering, well, why would anybody ever listen to this? There's usually another guy named Brian here. So don't take it out on us. We're just, you know, 2/3 of the Trinity, you know, so we couldn't really finish it. And I want to say thank you to our sponsor, Cards and Comics of Stockton Boulevard, Elk Grove, California, for slipping into our show somehow.
Yeah,
they do have UGO Magic the Gathering and Vanguard. All in stock for your gaming needs.
And I definitely want to pay homage to our second sponsor, which is hashtag FreePine64 Podnuts.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for listening, guys. We will see you next week.